And once again, we are back for the 364th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. And man, we got a lot to talk about this week. Do we not? Last week was a little bit of a tough show for me to do because this whole U.S. and Israel attacking Iran thing had just kicked off the morning I was recording the show. So I knew that was going to be the topic, and yet it's too early to really have enough to even talk about. But this week is not the case. We are going to get into it this week. A lot of people have a lot of things to say. I'm not our geopolitical expert at Radio Albion. That falls to our own Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. So you're not going to hear about me pretending to be an expert and talking about Iranian missile capability and capacity and things like that. But I do have a lot of opinions and a lot of observation. I think a lot of times just by being able to kind of stand outside of all of the flood of information and look at the pictures, sometimes we might see a few things that otherwise could easily get missed. When you get into focusing on a lot of different things. So hopefully we'll have something that interests you. We do, of course, have a lot to talk about. If you do get something out of the show, you want to support it in some way, shape, or form, the only way for that is snail mail. Look on the description page for each additional, each single show. We always have the snail mail address there. You have to put a stamp on an envelope. That's what we got. No Bitcoin. No, none of that. We're old school. We are analog. With that said, we do this week have we got one entry into the listener supporter mailbag. Dear Radio Albion, thank you for your fine podcasts. Now that Maduro and the Ayatollah are out of the way, things most certainly will improve in Europe and the USA. Ha ha ha. I smell your sarcasm from here. Let's see here. Trump is far exceeding my lowest expectations. He sure is bored of peace in Christ. And that is from R&G. Thank you very much. I do appreciate he is definitely he is the head of the board of peace, and so far in that capacity he seems to be doing a bang up job. I am recording this show on Sunday morning, early Sunday morning, so if a big happening happens on Monday or Tuesday morning, we're not going to be talking about it, obviously, because we don't have a way to fly to the future. But like I said, we're not lacking on observations and things to talk about. So without further ado, let's just start wading off into this mess. Now, one of the fun things I do sometimes, kind of like a mental exercise for myself doing these shows to keep it interesting, because like I say, we're on the episode 364. Believe me, you do 364 plus hours of this. You have to have a way to keep it entertaining for yourself. Don't keep it fresh for yourself. One of the mental exercises I do is I imagine different people listening to the show. For instance, just before recording the show last night, I was thinking a little bit ahead about this show and getting it done. And, I imagine because there was a Jonathan Greenblatt from the Anti-Defamation League went on a tirade about how they were monitoring all these podcasts and this. And I thought, who has to monitor, Parish of the Patriots? And I picture, because see, I'm a humble man. I don't imagine like Jonathan Greenblatt doesn't sit around and go, I will personally monitor this anti-Semite. So I picture some poor unpaid intern, and one of their first assignments at the Anti-Defamation League is, well, here you go. You can listen to this podcast, listen for some anti-Semitisms that you can report on so that we can put it in our annual hate incident report. Things that are said. And I'd always like to, and I like to picture that because I like to picture them going in with certain expectations and then, hearing information that maybe even they might stop and pause and go, yikes, because that serves as a challenge. I mean, you know me, I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I'm not going to sit here and, they're going to make me sit here and not say what I want to say, but it does challenge me. I find it is a challenge to think of somebody like that listening and hearing things from a point of view that might even make them stop. In other words, it makes you raise your level. But I'm kind of having some fun with that running in the back of my mind as we move forward. Now, I think one of the most important things to keep in mind as we get off into discussing this is, and I see, you know, this is something so many people miss, and Americans are the worst. You know, who wins a conflict? Because I see randos, you know, I'm not talking about actual, you know, content creators necessarily, but this more falls into the lines of randos posting comments on the internet. But some of the, shall we say, the $7,000 club will fall into this category too. But what determines who wins a war? You know, this is a fundamental question that I think is the first question we have to talk about getting off into this. Who wins a war? Because time and time again, I see most people, or a lot of people, shall we say, especially Americans, they have this idea. If you ask them to articulate, what they would say is whoever kills the most people wins. You know, who, because I see people going back and forth in comments and posts online, and the old, I guess you would say the MAGA crowd, because you don't know how many of these people are paid shills, but, or bots or whatever, you know, but they will basically sit there and point to how, you know, how Tehran has been bombed, how many, you know, the Ayatollah and how many people around him got taken out in the first day. And this means in their minds that America is winning. It's so important to remember that war at the end of the day is an extension of politics. It really, really is. So because it's an extension of politics, this is what determines who is winning or who wins a conflict. For instance, here's an easiest way to think about it if you're American. The United States, by body count, killed way, 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 way more Vietnamese than Vietnamese killed America. America took quite a few casualties, but compared to the Vietnamese, it's not even close. The United States killed multiple times more Vietnamese than the other way around. But does anybody today, if you went and said, America, what are you talking about? Vietnam is a bad example. America beat Vietnam. No, nobody thinks that. Everybody knows the U.S. lost in Vietnam. You see, even though the U.S. killed more Vietnamese, and still you will see people that have this mindset that whoever kills the most people, that's who wins. And that's bullocks. Why did the United States lose? Why is it that today, if you talk about Vietnam, people say the U.S. obviously and observably lost? Well, because they did not achieve the political goals they had when they went off into this conflict. This applies to every single conflict in the world, no matter who's involved. It is an extension of, you know, war itself is an extension of political goals. If you can achieve those goals with diplomacy, you will do that because it's cheaper. It's less controversial. You're going to have an easier path. If you cannot accomplish that through diplomacy, one of your options after that is to go to war and see if, okay, well, if we apply this military pressure and destroy some of their capability to physically stop us. Because if you say, as a country, you say, look, I want to come into your country and do ABC, or I want to do ABC over here, but to do that, I have to go through your country. And you say no. If you don't have a way to stop me from doing that, what you say is irrelevant. But just do it anyway. Well, it's like that. So militarily, can we come in and remove your ability to prevent us from doing what we wish to do? And so it's an extension. How many people, when you look at the devastating pictures of Gaza, sit there and say, well, Israel, boy, hey, you know, Hamas really got taught a lesson. Israel, you know, beat Hamas, but they haven't. Not yet. I'm not saying they can't. I'm saying observably they have not. Why? Because their political goals, if they could have gone in and sat down and negotiated a deal where Hamas would gather up every Palestinian in the Gaza Strip and lead them Exodus style off into Egypt, backwards Exodus and lead them off into Egypt and hand the territory over to Israel, they would have done that. Even if it cost some money, they would have done that. That obviously wasn't a realistic option. So Israel's political goal here is to push, you know, destroy everything, push these people out. Trump coming in and talking about building a resort, all the tacky stuff, a resort in the Gaza Strip. They haven't achieved that. They've leveled everything there. They've killed who knows how many people. Nobody even knows how many people. I see people throw out casualty figures on something like this, and we'll get to casualty figures here in a minute on this other topic. You know, nobody knows. Nobody's ever going to know. You know, people blown to smithereens, you know, wiped out. If you have a family of five living somewhere under a pile of rubble trying to take shelter and you drop a bomb and blow every one of them into hand-sized chunks, no, and every one of them's dead, nobody's there to report to somebody, I don't even know who you'd report to, that these people are dead. So we're never going to know. But they have killed a bunch. They've killed a bunch of Palestinians. They've massacred. They've devastated the infrastructure. There's just basically, if you've seen some of the drone footage, it looks like a nuclear weapon has gone off there. But they have not won. And this isn't some, you know, I don't know, like motivational, they have not won the hearts and the minds of the people. No, literally, they have not won because they still haven't started building their resort. They haven't started clearing the rubble. They don't occupy the territory. They cannot go in there and do what they wanted, what they have set out to do, because there's still enough fighters in there, you know, to take pot shots at them, to you know, wreak havoc. So they still have not achieved their goals. This applies to war, wherever it is. If you want to talk about Russia and Ukraine, or in this instance, the U.S. / Israel, they're one and the same at this point, attacking Iran. It doesn't matter if you're in America. It doesn't matter how many flashy videos they put up on the news, shock and awe, you know, 2.0 or whatever, to wow you into how impressive America is doing. Remember, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much they talk about how they're just, boy, they've killed this many Iranians. That is irrelevant. What is going to be relevant is which side achieves the political goals that they have set out to do. So this leads to the question, what are the political goals? This is a way we judge, you know, who's coming out on top, who's losing. You know, because people pick a side, and again, Americans are the worst. Everything is a sports game. You got to pick a team to cheer for, you know. And yeah, you know, that leads to an incorrect interpretation of events, because you want your team to win. You know, your team is fighting back. Your team is going to get it done. The other team is losing. I'm more interested in the truth. That's always what I'm interested in. And so what is the truth? How is each side faring? Well, for starters, as is usual the case, we don't know of so many things because they're lying. The propaganda is, of course, is going to be ratcheted even higher than it normally is. Every side is going to lie about things such as the amount of casualties they're taking. But if we keep in mind, what are the political goals here? Well, for Israel and the U.S., they wish to basically, if you know, you know, what was done to Syria, this is what they wish to do to Iran. That's the goal. That, you know, it has nothing to do with building a nuclear weapon. That's all bullshit. They want to do the Syrian model to Iran. Now, I've heard a lot of people are saying, you know, the Libyan model, that's a little more chaotic. You know, I mean, they'd settle for that. But the Syrian model, there's another example. You know, the back and forth between the U.S., Israel, and, you know, Damascus, Syria, the Assad regime. At the end of the day, we can look at that, and the Israel and U.S. won that. I mean, they did. It's not about individual, individual battles, confrontations, conflict. At the end of the day, who achieved their political goals? And in this, in Syria, the U.S. Israel won that because they got their political goals. They removed Assad, and Syria is a win for them, for the U.S. and Israel. That is a win. They want to replicate that win. If you think of to use the sports ball analogy, if you think you got a football team and they win their, they win the championship for their conference and they go to the Super Bowl, they're probably going to use much of the same play. If they've had a lot of success running the ball, that's what they're going to do. Syria was a win. So they're trying to translate that win into a win in Iran. That's the model. This is what winning looks like. They won that. You can sit there and say, well, they shouldn't have. And, I'm going to cheer for Assad and the Syrians. That's emotional nonsense. We're not doing emotionalism here. We're looking at things for what they are. The U.S. Israel won in Syria. That model, they want to see that result in Iran. That would be a winner. If it was whoever, people to get hung up in the weeds talking about, would they put the Shah's son in there? Look, it doesn't matter who they put it. They literally put an ISIS asset as the quote unquote president of Syria. It doesn't. In other words, it doesn't matter as long as they're obedient. And as long as they're no longer an obstacle to Israel's goals in the region. So, yes, they want to impose the Syrian model into Iran. That's the goal here. Now, to flip that over on the other side, for the Iranians, their goal is a lot more simple. They just need to survive. That's all. If this is all said and done, and this is all over, and they can survive intact, as a more or less functioning nation, obviously you get bombed to smithereens, a lot of things aren't going to be functioning. But if you can still hold the thing together and come out of the other side existing, they've won. It's that simple. The details in between and how we get to that end point, if we get to the end point and they put whoever ostensibly running Iran and successfully apply the Syrian model, then the U.S. Israel wins. Vice versa, if the Iranians can continue with a functioning state. And I guess a caveat to that is it ain't over till it's over. A lot of people, myself included, we will refer to Iraq as American loss. But if you look at it, and they did achieve their goals. It appeared they achieved their goals when they got Saddam and removed Saddam Hussein. But is the Iraq conflict really even over? Or is it really just kind of simmered down and is a lot more low level contact? I think we're seeing some of that flare up now. But anyway, with that out of the way, we should always keep in mind it's about who achieves their political goals. How many people get killed on whoever's side is irrelevant. Who's going to come out achieving their political goals? And with that having been said, my observation right now is the U.S. and Israel are in a lot of trouble. I mean, and this isn't just, that's what you want it to be. No, the U.S. and Israel they're in a lot of trouble. Now, I mean, look, we all know the media lies. That is their job. They tell you, what do they do? What do they themselves tell you? They're telling you a story. It's a story they want you to hear, framed in a manner they want you to hear. It's a narrative. It is a story. And in wartime, it is multiple times the normal amount of BS they're going to sling at you. So there's almost no point in getting bogged down into an argument with a friend or a coworker or a family member about it who gets their information from the mainstream media because they are just running on propaganda and lies. How can you believe anything the media says? They got a horrible, they have a horrible track record. The U.S. and Israel are in a lot of trouble. And you don't see this necessarily from, obviously, what's on the mainstream media. You don't see that at all there. You have to kind of read between the lines. And what do I mean by that? Well, when this kicked off a week ago, a little over a week ago as I am recording this, it was what? It was framed up as this is going to be a 3-4 day operation at the most. Essentially, when they killed the Ayatollah and a bunch of the leadership, right, you know, early on, they were popping champagne. They were already like, well, this is already over. We're just mopping up now. Granted, as I'm recording the show, it's been just a hair over 1 week. And in one week, we've gone from this is going to be roughly a 3 or 4 day operation to a 4 or 5 week operation to this could go all the way to September. And then yesterday, Trump said something along the lines of we're prepared for decades of this. There's your first red flag. It's not going well. When you go from this is going to be over the day after tomorrow to this will be over at the end of the month to this will be over at the end of the summer to, well, if we have to spend decades doing this, we're going to do it. There's your first red flag. So I say you can find the truth even in the media, but you got to read between the lines. If you just listen to the narrative they're telling you, you're going to be bamboozled. I don't think any of you are going to be bamboozled. You're listening to this show. You got some intelligence. But like I say, you can get some information. You got to read between the lines. The fact that they have gone on their timeline in 1 week. This is something you would expect over weeks or months. But when your timeline has shifted that drastically, in 1 week, it's a sign that things are not going well, like at all. The fact that on the U.S. side, they can't get their story straight. You know, Iraq, I think back to the last Iraq invasion. And, you know, the narrative, the time they took to build up a narrative to sell to the public. And, you know, say what you will about it, it was a lie, of course. But they at least put the effort in. They put the work in. This thing appears to have just been slapped together. It was slapped together. You know, the Iraqi narrative was years in the making. This is something that was slapped together ad hoc. With basically, I mean, I just, again, my opinion, I think they really thought that if they killed the Ayatollah and the leadership, that would be it. The whole country would collapse. Maybe there would be an uprising in the street and maybe they had assets that they could put in there. Now that that hadn't happened, there doesn't seem to be a plan B, which, as we get along here, is a pretty dangerous situation for everybody in the region and honestly everybody in the world, because this thing is growing. And the options for the parties in trouble, and I do believe the U.S. and Israel are the parties that are in trouble in this conflict. More so than the other. I'm not saying the Iranians are just mopping up. This isn't a movie. But out of the parties involved, the Israeli-U.S. side, they're in a lot of trouble. And they have the capability, because they're in a lot of trouble, their options start getting narrowed. And there aren't a lot of good options here. What makes this conflict unique is the American mode of operandi when they lose a conflict like this, such as Vietnam, Afghanistan, is when it becomes unbearable, they simply just put out a new narrative. They essentially declare victory and leave. That's what they do. They say, well, we did it. You know, mission accomplished. You know, the famous meme, basically, of George W. Bush, mission accomplished. You know, they declare victory and they just leave. You know, they just pack up and leave. There's a very dramatic example of this in Afghanistan. They don't have that option. And the reason why is because of the other party driving the conflict, which is Israel. You know, the Americans could just declare victory and leave Vietnam. because, you know, they had the option to do that. The United States government is owned and operated out of Israel. I mean, this is a normie talking point at this point. You know, 10 years ago, this could still get you shouted down as an anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist. And I mean, like literally just 100%, you know, normies, if you would, know this. This isn't even a controversial point. You know, it has progressed and become so obvious that, you know, normal people know this. There's people on YouTube talking about this, and YouTube is probably one of the most tightly controlled, you know, alternative media outlets, you know, you can imagine. And I mean, people are openly talking about this. So the fact that Washington is owned and operated, they are property of, they have a tramp stamp on that says property of, you know, Israel. This means the U.S. can't simply declare victory and leave unilaterally on their own. I see people saying, well, the Americans would just have to declare victory and leave. They can't. They answer to Israel, period. This adds complication because it narrows options. Normally, I would be, if this was any other sort of conflict that didn't, wasn't so obviously and blatantly driven by Israel, I would say, yeah, the Americans will probably mess with this. Trump has a short attention span, and I want to get into Trump here in a few minutes. You know, Trump's going to move on to something else. They're going to declare victory and pick up their toys and go back home. They don't have that option. Israel is calling the shots here. Netanyahu is calling shots. Again, this isn't even a controversial point. My dear intern at the ADL, you don't even need to jot this down to send up the chain because everybody knows this. This is being talked about casually now on virtually every social media platform in the West. Everybody knows this. I'm sorry. 10 years ago, you could have had something to put in your report. Today, not so much. The U.S. and Israel are essentially in a suicide pact. And you can get up into a discussion of how does a small country wind up controlling a larger country. There's no shortage of content on that topic. We've talked about it multiple times. That's not what we're going to get into today. This is just a known fact. It is what it is, as the saying goes. We're not going to get off into why that is. It's not exactly a mystery. The U.S. and Israel are tied in a suicide pact. They're in this together. So the U.S. in this instance doesn't have the ability to simply declare victory and leave unless they get permission to do so. But you know, both parties in a suicide pact are in trouble. And Israel's in a lot of trouble. And this is honestly the most dangerous thing. Again, if you didn't have this tied at the hip element to this, you know, as bad as this is, the U.S. would find a way to declare victory and leave, and that'd just be the end of it for the most part. The fact that they're tied to Israel on this so tightly, so close, is not, you know, there's no plausible deniability here. And the fact that Israel is in a lot of trouble really is what is I think, one of the most dangerous elements to this conflict is how much trouble Israel is in. Now, if you get your news from the mainstream media, you're sitting here going, GPT, you're out of your mind. It's Iran that's in trouble. This is not a sports game. I'm doing my best as we discuss this not to come off as I'm cheering for one side or the other. You know, is one side observably the aggressor here? Absolutely. But I want to discuss it in the context of truth without getting off into the weeds. Now, I'm going to get into some Christian stuff before this show is over. You know I am. That'll be our time to talk about morality and where we stand. But when we talk about, you know, the facts, the truth of this, that's what I want to stay focused on. I want to get into, you know, well, I want this side. I think this side has a moral high ground. which is relevant, but I don't want to be cheerleading for one side or that. I want to keep this, as we go through it, you know, just discussing, you know, looking at the facts. And the fact is, Israel is in a lot of trouble, way worse trouble. This was not well planned out on their part. I was thinking about this morning before recording the show. I was sitting here trying to, you know, get warmed up. I do it first thing in the morning. I got to wake up first, and I get up pretty early. And I was sitting there thinking about it, and I thought, you know, ironically, you know, the state of Israel could be in trouble to the point of not existing any longer. And ironically, the person who is would be most responsible for that is not the Ayatollah, not Hezbollah, but Netanyahu himself. You know, and because Netanyahu's government, you know, he's formed a coalition. He's had to form a coalition. You know, I mean, Netanyahu is Netanyahu. But if you think back to Netanyahu from 20 years ago, this guy's been around like forever in the Israeli leadership sphere. You know, Netanyahu from 20 years ago, I mean, yeah, sure, he was still talking about Iran's going to have a bomb in next week. But Netanyahu from 20 years ago said a lot less insane things than what Netanyahu 2026 says. And part of that is because Netanyahu has had to form a coalition government essentially with Israel's version of our lunatic Christian Zionist people, you know, evangelical Christian Zionist people. He has had to form a coalition with the Israeli equivalent to that, the absolute lunatics. It's the lunatic coalition. It's not Likud. It's the lunatic coalition. So as a result, Netanyahu's rhetoric has reflected that. So he's had to, you know, he's come off sounding more and more like a lunatic over the years. I don't think that's because he's gotten crazier. I think it's just because he's had to partner up with lunatics. So he's got, you know, he's got to sound more and more like them to hold the coalition together. And because of that, you know, Israel's in a lot of trouble. You've got a guy running things and he's formed a lunatic coalition. He has really put the nation state of Israel in a lot of trouble. We should remember, look, he has a boss too. There are wealthy Jews that are going to have enough power and sway that they could pull his plug or at least, you know, threaten to do so. I'm not in on the inner workings of Israeli politics, but I mean, at the end of the day, somebody has probably got enough power, sway, money talks, that if these wealthy people get together and say, we got to do something about BB, we got to do something about BB, they'll probably find a way to do something about BB. And I if I was them, I would be holding the meetings yesterday, because this guy, he's got Israel in a lot of trouble. And by a lot of trouble, I mean whether or not they're going to survive levels of trouble. Quietly, and this is a weekend, this is how bad things are going. We're just, as of recording this show, we're just a hair over, we're just barely a week into this thing. And people in the know are quietly starting to be concerned about the Samson option coming on the table. And there's not a lot, it's not widespread. But there are people, and myself, I include myself, this is in my mind too. Because, and I'll get into this, do my best to get into this here in a minute. Israel's options are narrowing. People are starting to quietly remember the talk about the Samson option. This tells you it's not going well. Now, of course, Israel has really clamped down. That's one of the reasons they gave America TikTok over to Larry Ellison, so that they could keep, you know, because last June, there were videos of missiles landing in Israel. We don't have any of that. You know, the Israeli censorship, they're threatening Israeli citizens with prison if they put up a video on the internet of any of these things, and then they claim is, oh, we don't want the information getting out about where our defense launchers are located. That ain't it. This is so that they can create a narrative that they're winning. If you're living in Tel Aviv, if you're living in Tel Aviv and you're having to run to the bomb shelter four times a day and hope when you come out that your bagel shop is still in one piece, you don't feel like you're winning. You know, I mean, it is interesting. The massive censorship campaign that has been heavy-handed put it down. When you threaten people with prison time for putting a video up on the internet for posting a TikTok, this too does not bode well. And what's also interesting is how that translates over into the United States. The Americans are not putting any information up as far as how hard hit that Israel is getting, but you can only cover that up for so long. There is no, how do I want to put this? The U.S. and Israel have no offensive capability to go in and do regime change in Iran. Air power is not going to do it. It doesn't work that way. They would look at Gaza. At some point in time, you got to stick a rifle in a man's hand and tell him to go in there and establish your control. This is always done by assholes who stay back comfy and cozy in their bunker, safe and sound, because they're more important than you. At the end of the day, they're going to drag some conscript off the streets and, you know, in West Jerusalem or something, stick a rifle in his hand and tell him, you know, get out there, Shlomo, or, you know, some kid from the Midwest or the South and say, get out there and restore the democracy and freedom or whatever. They're not. You know, Netanyahu's son ain't going. None of Trump's sons are going. It'll be you. It's always the common people. And they don't have the ability to do that. Israel is nowhere near the ability to do that. You know, how many times have they tried to invade Lebanon and it never works out? Like I say, hell, they can't successfully invade Gaza, and they have turned the place literally into powder, and they still can't invade. They can go so far and then they get repelled. They can go so far and get repelled. The U.S. is no better. I mean, if you look into the legit, there's a lot of Americans talking about, is Trump going to send boots on the ground? How's he going to do that? I'm looking at the clock here, and I'll just forewarn you, we're going to run a little long here. I hope it doesn't screw up Sven's scheduling too much. But we got a lot to get into, and I want to get into a lot of it today. I want to try to cover most of it today. I hear Americans talk about is whether or not Trump's going to put boots on the ground. Who's he going to send? If you look into, again, Americans think of things in movie terms, you know? Like, Trump can give the order, and suddenly there's 300,000 American soldiers on the ground in Iran doing an invasion. It doesn't work that way. You have to feed them. You have to clothe them. You have to have shelter for them. They have to have water. They have to have a supply line. They've got to be able to get more ammunition. It is a very complicated. Go into and study the run-up to the Iraq invasion and how much, you know, how much you have to do. That's without even getting into the terrain of Iran that makes this insane. You have to have a massive supply line. Now, this isn't Russia fighting Ukraine, which is right next door. This is on the other side of the world. Now, he might send some. They're just going to get massacred. They're not going to do anything. Because, you know, Trump is getting detached from reality. I want to get into that here in just a minute. But he can't send an effective fighting force. You would have to have, you know, ignoring the fact that you generally are considered, it's a kind of a, just kind of considered a more or less rule standard that, you know, an offensive force attacking a defensive force has to be able to apply, you know, basically three times the amount of power. Well, if you think of how the size of the Iranian military, you're talking about, you know, well over a million U.S. soldiers. They don't even have that many. If they pulled every single person in the U.S. military, gave them a rifle and said, go invade, that leaves nobody left for logistics, by the way. You know, they don't have. If he sends 50,000 American soldiers, he could probably do that. If he sent a 50,000 American invasion force to Iran, they're going to get wiped out in a day. I don't care how much air support they have. You know, because at some point in time, you got to engage the enemy. And when you engage the enemy on the ground, you can't just call in massive airstrikes because they're going to blow up your own dudes. You know, there's limits here. They're going to stand a chance. Now, I want to get into Trump himself, because, and then we can circle back to Israel's option. I'm not done talking about Israel's option, because that's what matters here. If Israel was not a factor in this, the U.S. would simply declare victory and go home and leave. You know, they don't care. They don't care that people know they lost. They'll put it in the media and say they won, and that would be the end of it. But again, the Israel factor is the anchor that says that can't happen. Trump appears to have lost his ever-loving mind. And I think more and more people are coming to this conclusion. You know, aside from the cultist members, you know, the people, it doesn't matter. You know, Trump could do his State of the Union and, you know, I don't know, bring a small child up on the stage and cut their throat on national TV. And there's a certain segment of the population that would cheer it. They you know, would say that was based and this is what they voted for. We're not talking about those people. But among everybody else, Trump is coming off as unhinged. Is he? I don't know. Some of this may be, I was considering this, and some of this may simply be because he is getting told things. Trump considers, I believe, you know, and I hate people doing pop psychology, and I guess that's kind of what I'm doing here, you know, psychoanalyzing somebody. I'm just talking about what I observe of the person, you know, what little knowledge I have. And in my opinion, Trump seeks to surround himself with people that are loyal. And that's a good idea. That obviously you don't want a bunch of traitors in your midst. The problem is Trump's personal definition of loyalty, he conflates loyalty with people who kiss his ass. And I'm putting that bluntly. I'm not trying to be vulgar and crude here. But that's what he does. He conflates loyalty with people who kiss his ass. And you see this in the people he surrounds himself with. They will, if they appear in a public setting with him and it's their turn to speak, they will spend all their time publicly, like a humiliation ritual, kissing Trump's ass about how amazing he is. You can't. Look, you got to have people around you. You got to at least have somebody, a handful of people around you that are willing to look you in the eye and say, that's stupid. What is wrong with you? No. You know, if you have friends that do nothing but tell you how great you are, they're not necessarily going to be the guys that are going to help you out when you get into a situation. A real friend, somebody that looks, say, well, you know, buddy, you know, I love you, man. You're like a brother to me. But what you're doing right now is stupid. You need to reconsider that. I don't think he has anybody like that around him. You know, and you know, the fact that he counts snakes like Lindsey Graham as his allies is telling. All of these people in his administration, his cabinet members, he surrounded himself, they're ass kissers. You know. He could come up with the most convoluted idea that's obviously not going to work. And there's not a single person. Can you imagine a Pete Hegseth sitting there going, no, Mr. President, that's a stupid idea. We can't do that. No, these guys are going to kiss his ass and say, my gosh, that's the most brilliant thing ever, Trump. So maybe it's part of that because he's getting false feedback. He comes up with these half-brained ideas and his so-called people that he's hired to be experts in these fields sit there and tell him it's brilliant and there's no way that cannot work. And then it does not work. And he can't make sense of the fact that it's not working. So he's frustrated, you know, and he goes back and say, why is this not working? And they give him some lame excuse. They can't tell him because your idea is retarded and you shouldn't have done that. So they give him some half-hearted idea, which then he translates in his brain to, well, y'all weren't prepared then. I told you my idea and it's not working. That means it's somebody else's fault. And this becomes a feedback loop, and it just goes around and around and around in a circle, and they just keep repeating. There's nobody there, and it's Trump's fault. Because if somebody stands up and tells him, that's stupid, Mr. President, don't do this, he's going to fire them because they're disloyal. How dare you tell me? I'm stupid. He does seem to be coming mentally unhinged. His proclaims, you know, his proclamations are unhinged from reality. This war is not going well. We've already talked about the signs of this. And what does he do? He keeps doubling down. Well, now he's making announcements like, we won't settle for anything but unconditional surrender. Unconditional surrender. You know, what, are you going to bring one of your aircraft carriers in and force the Iranians and shackles to come up there and sign a treaty of unconditional surrender? I mean, it's detached from any sort of reality. It's like there's no thinking this through. Unhinged, you know. Well, he comes out and make these proclamations about how bad they're destroying Iran, and yet they keep revising their timeline of how long this is going to take. He came out the other day and said that Iran bombed their own school and killed the little girls at the school. Even his own tightly controlled media in the U.S. You know, we don't have a free press here. Newsflash. It's not a newsflash to any of y'all, but newsflash, we don't have a free press. It's very tightly controlled. Again, there's a reason the U.S. media isn't going off the reservation and publishing videos that people in other parts of the world can see out of Israel of missiles landing. You know, because some Israelis are doing that, even though they're being threatened with prison time. They're putting it up. This is what we're going through. If you're in other parts of the world, you can see some of that, but not here. You know, even with this tightly controlled media, you know, even the tightly controlled media has come out and said, yeah, the U.S. did that. Now, my first response was Israel probably did that. Because, I mean, that's their playbook. You know, Hamas was at the school. Hamas is under the hospital. But they're saying the U.S. did it. You know, even American media is saying the U.S. did it. And he came out just yesterday, I believe, and proclaimed that, no, the Iranians did it. They blew up their own school. He's appearing more and more unhinged. We want to put that in the back of our minds. I wanted to get into that. I wanted to lay that down because that plays into, because what matters here is in America's options. America doesn't have any options. They're not the one calling the shots. The shots are being called out of Israel. Israel, they're in a lot of trouble, and they've got limited options here. If, you know, because a few people are concerned, and I think it's a valid concern, that Israel, because their options are pretty narrow, and it's not going well. Like I said, the one person who could single-handedly is probably closer to destroying Israel than ever since it was established after World War II. Is Benjamin Netanyahu. This guy could go down in history as the man who destroyed Israel. I mean, just for sure. Sorry, my dear intern at the ADL. It's not anti-Semites. It is Netanyahu himself who could single-handedly be the guy who destroys Israel. Their options are pretty narrow because I think there comes a point they need to walk this back. But they're so far in, you know what I mean? If you get into a fist fight in a bar and you know, within the first 2 minutes, you realize that you're starting to get your ass kicked. You're not getting the upper hand here. You might want to back out of that, but now it's a little late. Their options are narrow. Trump's mental capacity is one of the options. Now, if Israel were to do the Samson, they were to use a nuclear weapon. Of course, if they did that, I'm sure they would try to frame it as, you see, the Iranians were trying to build a nuke and accidentally nuked to themselves. It would be a ridiculous narrative, but I'm sure that's the narrative they would try to sell. I don't even think with the media control they could do that. It would be so obvious. But if Israel were to literally, use a nuclear weapon against Iran. Hey, I'm not sure that would even be enough. You know, I mean, because a nuclear weapon is very localized. It's a big country. Not everybody is sitting in one room in Tehran. Once you let the genie out of that bottle, you're not going to stuff that back in. Israel is already, if it wasn't for the United States, Israel would already be a global pariah state. And, you know, stepping over that line that's it. You know, your influence and your control of these Western governments only goes so far. And, you know, you get to a point where you could try to continue to exist as a country, but when no one else in the world will do business with you or have anything to do with you, you know, a man in jail isn't a threat to anybody because he's locked in there by himself. Using a nuclear weapon would essentially put Israel into a global jail. You know, you can kill somebody, you know, and that eliminates that problem. But when the police drag your ass and throw you in jail, what are you doing then? You're not going about your life. You're in jail. Israel could wind up using a nuclear weapon. And this would put them in jail. You know, they may continue for a while as an existing state, but, you know, to what end? They would essentially, no one would have anything to do with them. And at the end of the day, they rely on outside support to continue to exist and interacting with outside countries. And nobody will have anything to do with you. Nobody would want to be caught dead having anything to do with you. It's, again, this spells the end of the state. So what are their other options? They need to find a way to walk out of this fight, to crawdad back out of this fight. And yeah, they aren't going to give up on their greater Israel ambitions, but this isn't going to result in that. They need to find a way to crab walk themselves back out of this fight and save face, I guess I want to say. Now, that's the best option. Is if Israel decides and it's going to have to come from somebody, you know, powerful in inside of the Israeli apparatus. I can't name it. I don't know who it is, but it's going to be big money people. I don't know how lunatic, you know, how crazy Netanyahu is. I think a lot of what Netanyahu says is because he's, as we've talked about before, he had to form this coalition of basically lunatics in Israel. You know, so I think a lot of what he says is just throwing red meat, you know, to his coalition government and the people supporting it. But everybody got a boss. And there's going to be wealthy Israelis that have enough pull to pull the plug on it and tell, you know, call BB up and say, okay, look, you know, we can figure out a way to get back, walk this back out. And you can quietly go retire, you know, on a beach somewhere. Or we're going to remove you, you know. One of the ways to walk this out that I see forming up, and this is why I wanted to get into Trump's mental state, is to essentially blame all of this on Trump. And, you know, in other words, use their assets in the U.S. because everybody in Washington, D.C., virtually everybody in Washington, D.C. is on their payroll. They're there because they were put there. You know, you have all these Republicans running around swearing loyalty to Donald Trump. Their loyalty into Donald Trump. Their loyalty is to AIPAC. And, you know, as Trump is coming off more and more unhinged, one of the exit strategies here could be to basically remove him from office. In other words, have finally the administration people come together and the Congress come together. You know, right now the Congress is waffling and not doing anything because they haven't gotten their marching orders yet. They don't know what to do. They're order takers. And the orders haven't come down. So they have a vote and say, you know, well, do we, force Trump to stop this military operation? Well, they haven't gotten that order yet. So you just have this waffling and political shuffling. if all of the phones start ringing once in the U.S. Congress and the AIPAC people are on the other end of the line and say, get Trump out of there, the call has been made. You will have a unanimous vote, a near unanimous vote in Congress to remove him from office, to invoke the, you know, to invoke, I think it's the 25th Amendment, that he's mentally incapacitated. He's got to be removed. They throw Trump under the bus, say he's a lunatic, basically say this lunatic started all of this, and use that as a starting point. You have somebody for the public to blame, and they can start walking, try to walk this back and try to make peace, you know, some sort of peace and stop this. That's the best option on the table for them, quite frankly, in my opinion. The nuclear option, if they nuke, that's the end of Israel. I mean, yeah, they could hold on for a while, but nobody is going to. If you think you're going to put it out in the media and claim Iran was building a nuclear weapon, this is the proof, and they accidentally set it off because they're incompetent and blew themselves up. Nobody, literally nobody's going to believe that. I mean, you can get some of the moron, you know, like we talked about this week, you know, NPC public to believe that, but that's irrelevant. Every world leader is going to know what you've done, and nobody's going to want to have anything to do with you. And even if you could somehow on some level convince people of that, it's undeniable that you started this. You started the fight. If you go into a fight and punch somebody in the face after calling their mama names, then you punched them in the face, and then you got your ass kicked, nobody's going to blame the other guy. You know, you come up to him all pummeled up, you know, and your face all swollen up, your eyes are shut, and you talk about, that guy, did you see what he did to me? And everybody be like, yeah, you know. Your alligator mouth was writing checks that your mockingbird ass couldn't cash. That's what happens. Saying from back in the day, if you're young, you're like, what's he talking about? Yeah, your alligator mouth started writing checks that your mockingbird ass couldn't cash. And that's what happened. Now you know better. You know what I mean? The best out here is to, and I'm thinking, maybe some of that's being said. I don't know. We'll have to see how it plays out. But, yeah, Trump being unhinged, I think this lays the groundwork. You can't have something of this scale and just kind of shrug it off. Somebody's going to get blamed. And I think Trump could very well, that's the best out for Israel, because that's all that matters. You know, the U.S. is going to do what they're told. Like I say, you see this in action and people are like, Congress is shirking their duty. Congress is waiting for orders. What looks like, you know, frittering around and indecisiveness and, you know, impotence. This is just orders takers. They haven't received any orders yet. You know, if you called a vote to, if, you know, I'm recording this on Sunday morning. If this evening every phone blew up in Congress and in the cabinet members of Trump's own administration, and the AIPAC people are on the other end of the line and say, pull the plug on this guy, Monday morning you'll have a vote and you'll have a massive vote to remove him from office because he's mentally unfit. That's the best out. That is the best out for everybody involved. You know, and it sets up a situation to where the Iranians have a reason to step it down. Now, I think they're going to have some other demands to quietly remove all the sanctions and whatnot. You know, they're going to, but that gives enough of a win to the Iranians to where they have a motivation. Because if you're winning, you know, if back to your barroom fight analogy, if you're punching this guy and you're kicking his ass, you ain't got a lot of motivation to stop. Somebody needs to offer you something. And I think that gives them something as well. I think this is the best exit strategy for all involved. Now, you can sit there and say, well, you know, get off into the weeds about it shouldn't be this way. Well, there are a lot of things that shouldn't be this way, but it is what it is. And so I think that's the most viable. The most disastrous, you know, goes the other direction. And again, I don't know how crazy Netanyahu is, but even if he actually believes some of this crazy shit he comes up with, there's people, you know, everybody got a boss, and there's wealthy Jews that call him up and say, we're pulling your plug, Benny. You've been great. You've been a great asset for a lot of decades. We appreciate your service. But it's time to step that down. And it's going to be the type of people got enough money and enough power. They're on enough of a council, you know, with other powerful people that he doesn't get to tell them no. If they call him up and say, BB, it's time to walk this down, he's going to have to do it. Now, I apologize. I'm a man of my word. And I said we were going to get into some, you know, we're going to have our Christian elements here. But just we've been essentially getting into the woods here with this and really laying the groundwork. And I know I said, well, we're going to get into some Christian elements here. And we're going to go a little long. Well, I'm looking at time. I know I just hit an hour. This show just hit an hour. And if I get into that, even if I rush through it, we're probably talking 30 minutes. You know, well, that goes from, you know, if it's 10 minutes long, that's a little long. If it's 30 minutes long, that's just, I've completely broken the format of the show. So I'm going to make myself a note and do my best to get into those elements on next week's show. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up here because like I said, if I'm going to run 10 minutes long, you know, I'll do that. But, yeah, to do it justice, the next segment, you know, getting into the Christian element and how that feeds into a lot of this and the role it's playing. Yeah, that's going to take a long time. Like I say, probably minimum 30 minutes. And even, you know, unless I just try to really rush it. It's like, yeah, we're not going to rush it. We got next week, God willing. And so I'm going to make myself a note here and try to get into that next week. Like I said, I thought I could get into it this week, and we're just out of time. So we're going to go ahead and stop there. I hope you enjoyed this week's discussion. We're going to have a lot to discuss, I'm sure, going into next week. And hopefully whatever we've discussed here is, you know, maybe humbly, I say, giving you a little more, you know, a little broader perspective on this as they sling all this BS around. So, you know, we'll continue, I'm sure, this along this line of discussion next week. I say I'm going to try to for sure get into some of the Christian elements. So I hope you'll all come back for that next week. Yes, you intern at the Anti-Defamation League, you too can come back. You're probably, even you are on the edge of your seat going, what is this guy going to say next? So you too are welcome to come back and listen to our continuing thoughts here. So yeah, I hope y'all enjoy the rest of your week. And of course, I hope you will come back next week for the Parish of the Patriots.